If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Healthcare for Humans, hosted by Dr. Sundar, expands our understanding of the history and culture of different communities and how to provide culturally responsive care. There's an episode you should check out where guest Dr. Duran details the systemic barriers faced by individuals with DACA status and highlights the importance of addressing these barriers. Check out Healthcare for Humans on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Hi, welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown, where we explore the factors that impact on women's health and how we can use that knowledge to be our healthiest self. I'm Dr. Mitzi Crockover. You know, if you've gone through IVF or in vitro fertilization, then you know how rigorous and time-consuming it can be. You probably also know then that hormone monitoring plays a crucial role. Today, we're going to talk about the process of hormone monitoring. We'll learn how new technology may be able to make the IV process more convenient and efficient. We'll also talk about the other end of the spectrum, menopause, and how such monitoring may help us personalize hormone treatment in the future. And stay tuned until the end when we discuss the current over-the-counter hormone measurement diagnostics and how accurate they are. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice. Please do speak with your healthcare provider for any specific questions related to your personal situation. I am very excited about this conversation that we're about to have because it talks about hormones and some really interesting new science and innovation. We have today Dr. Efrat Eliyahu, who's an assistant professor of genetics and genomic sciences at the Icahn Institute in New York. She specializes in embryology and reproductive research, and she is an advisor to Avita Life, which is a women's health diagnostic company. And we're going to welcome later another member of the team of Avita Health, Dr. Natasha Streisand, who is a process architect at Avita Life, and we'll also find out what a process architect is. So if I can call you Effie, it is great to see you today.
Thank you. Yes. Thank
great.
You.
First of all, let's talk a little bit about your work and what you focus on.
So my work is actually focusing on how to improve, in general, women health, focusing on try to promote safe and effective hormonal therapy, and also to try to improve the IVF in vitro fertilization protocol that is heavily using hormonal therapy.
Let's take a moment to talk about IVF so we're all on the same page. In IVF, eggs are combined with sperm outside the body in a lab setting. This process includes several steps, starting with medications to control the menstrual cycle, followed by stimulating the ovaries to produce multiple eggs. These eggs are then retrieved, fertilized with sperm, and the resulting embryos are transferred back into the uterus, hoping for a successful implantation and pregnancy. Hormone monitoring is pivotal in this process. Hormones regulate everything from the growth and release of eggs to preparing the uterus for embryo implantation. In IVF, precise hormone control is critical. It helps in effectively stimulating the ovaries to produce viable eggs, ensuring they're retrieved at the right time, and preparing the uterus to receive the embryo. Any imbalance can affect the chances of success, which makes hormone monitoring so important in this process. Dr. Eliyahu's work focuses on enhancing the way eggs and embryos are cultured during IVF. The goal is to improve the conditions in which these cells develop, aiming to extend their viability and increase fertilization success rates, and potentially reduce the need for more intense hormonal treatments that are often part and parcel of IVF today. Dr. Eliyahu's approach is particularly relevant in today's diverse IVF landscape. It's no longer just couples struggling with fertility for years who seek IVF. The patient base now includes a wider spectrum: older individuals, same-sex couples, and single people eager to start families. Dr. Eliyahu advocates for personalized treatment protocols that cater to the unique needs of each of these groups.
As a scientist, the way that we have in order to try to improve the clinical protocol is by, first I was trying to improve the culture conditions, for example, in the IVF, in order to prolong the life of eggs and embryos in culture, to bring into higher successful rate, fertilization rate, so there will be no needs of aggressive superovulation and aggressive hormonal therapy in order to achieve a successful cycle, IVF cycle.
For those who have not, you know, experienced IVF, tell us a little bit about that process and why what you're focusing on is so important.
So I would like to start with explaining why I believe the protocol in the IVF is as it is today and why I believe it's need to be adjusted. So decades ago, when the IVF clinic was helping couples that were challenged to get pregnant, in most of the cases, couples were trying for several years to get pregnant. And when they reached to the point that they were desperate, they went to the IVF clinic in order to get a solution. And back then, the protocol was adjusted based on the population that was coming to the clinic. This protocol was based on hormonal therapy in order to increase the number of oocytes that can actually survive in the in vitro environment.
The eggs.
To receive embryos. These days, most of the patients that are coming to the IVF clinic have different challenges than what it was years ago. There are a lot of patients that they have advanced age. Not that it wasn't in the past, but mainly today is much more one of the most example of the needs to IVF clinic help. And also different, you know, couples or same-sex couples or just patients that do not have the other partner to conceive. And all of those new patients, so-called, are going through the same exact protocol.
It's like one size fits all.
Yes, and one protocol fits all, mainly. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know that there are different clinics and different, I don't want to say that everyone is like that, but this is the mainstream phenotype that we are seeing. So aside of trying to improve the, you know, the IVF media culture and conditions, I thought that in order to enable physician to do hormonal monitoring and not just one dose fits all in order to reduce the side effect that patients, especially patients that are going through IVF, is to enable the physicians and the providers to do the hormonal monitoring. My second push was to try to see if there is any way to give those patients, and not only the IVF patient, and we can touch later on which population actually can benefit from that, to be able to monitor the fluctuations and changes in hormones at home in order to bring, you know, better efficiency of the treatment that they are going through, and also safety.
And I would also assume convenience, because right now they are having to come in every few days, get their blood drawn, and also an ultrasound. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're saying is that if you could do this at home, then that would cut down on the number of visits as well. But how would you deal with the need for ultrasound?
So there is no question about the conveniency, home test, you know, allowing the individuals to monitor their hormone wherever they want, if it's in the office or at home, and they don't have to necessarily rush into the clinic. So in most of the clinic, the protocol today, you need to come to the clinic for a period of time between 7 to 12 days, almost every day, for blood drawing, and not always also a vaginal ultrasound to validate the size and the amount of follicles in the ovaries, in order to better predict when to do the oocyte retrieval and the other procedure that need to be done. The ultrasound is not necessarily is done every visit, sometimes yes, because the patient is already there. But if we could just reduce the amount of visits in the clinic during every cycle, and you know, the quality of life of those patients will dramatically improve.
Let's back up a little bit and just kind of start from the beginning, so that everybody, our listeners, are all on the same page. Let's talk about what are the sex hormones that are important in women's health, if you will.
Okay, so sex hormones actually have an effect on almost every aspect of our body. So there are physical traits, there are physiological traits, there are mental health and emotional well-being influence. And of course, at our sexual function, and also about our reproductive health. And also, I would like to mention that some hormone has also influence and are involved in some of the oncology field, like in breast cancer. Some tumor are depend on steroids hormone and so on. So really, sex hormone has a very wide effect on our body.
Unlike in IVF, where hormone levels are monitored frequently, in menopause, Dr. Eliyahu notes that hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, is often a one-protocol-fits-all approach, where adjustments are made based on symptom relief. However, she emphasizes the potential risks and benefits of HRT, highlighting that without monitoring hormone levels, it's challenging to determine the therapy's impact on conditions like cancer or cardiovascular disease. Dr. Eliyahu also points out the variability in how individuals process hormones, especially as they age, and how this affects hormone therapy.
We got into the conclusion that if you are not monitoring the level of hormones during time, if you are not monitoring, you cannot say for sure if the hormonal therapy is actually causing damage or increase the risk for A, B, C, or D, if you cannot even correlate it to the level of the hormones in the blood. And it doesn't matter for me if you are saying, okay, for taking 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and 4 years, because what we see in actually animal model that we perform, a study that we performed, what we can see is that there, for example, there is a very important enzyme in the liver that's responsible for the processing and breaking down clearance of the estrogen in the blood. Mm-hmm. That during aging, and I want to remind you that when you are starting the menopause, or where you are deep in menopause, a postmenopause condition, those condition, those enzyme levels are going down. So if you are taking today 1 milligram of estrogen, or you are taking it in 3 years deep in menopause, the level in your blood will be totally different. And then it can switch between helping to damaging. And everything can be controlled easier if you can just monitoring. So answering your question, I think, or even at the beginning, physicians are not monitoring the hormones because it's not important. And that's what we are trying to fight. You don't know that it's important because you are not measuring. It's the egg, you know, or the chicken.
Sure. But just to be clear, at this point in time, even if mm-hmm. a clinician was monitoring it, there's no real guidelines about what to do with respect to those different levels.
Absolutely. And this is how we can get into resolution, right? If we will have the hormonal monitoring at home device to do hormonal drug monitoring, the clearance of the drug from the body, the absorption of the blood, which is totally different from one person to another. If we want to personalize hormonal therapy, if we will do it, we'll be able to do a wide clinical trials to validate and finally to solve those questions. Where and who should take the hormonal therapy? How much should be have? If there is any disposition for a lung disease in that patient, do not advise to take hormones or and so on. But in order to raise the flag, yes, no, we have to have those devices in order to prove that monitoring can dramatically change the quality of life of patients.
You know, what you're really highlighting is that we don't have information, and it's really amazing given that every woman will go through menopause should they live that long, and yet we have such little information about it because really research has lagged behind. So what you're really talking about in a lot of ways is needing to progress that research very quickly.
Yes. And you know, one of the efforts that I would say for Vitalife was, okay, you are saying that we need a device in order to actually answer those questions, in order to create a real-time clinical studies. And for example, you know, I'm sure you know with your background, for progesterone, for example, used to be tested during pregnancy and it stopped. And you're asking physician, and I can ask you, why do you think it stopped? Is it meaningful? But we know that progesterone is so important for the support of the embryos in the uterus. The embryo can be perfectly fine and still you will go into miscarriages, only because of the wall of the uterus that was not supportive enough with the progesterone to hold the embryo. So I'm asking myself why it stopped. Because it's not convenient. It's impossible to monitor the progesterone during pregnancy. But I strongly believe that bringing back the hormonal monitoring or hormonal testing will help us to light, you know, the knowledge and of what's going on. And also the fact that hormones are changing during the day. So some physicians, they said, it's not important because I will test it in the morning and will test it in the evening. It will be different. What does that mean to me? But if you are doing monitoring during time or more frequently, only at home you can do it, then you can get the whole picture of what's going on in this specific patient's body.
Well, you alluded to, or you actually mentioned, Avitra. So let's bring on Dr. Natasha Streisand, who is the, as I said, process architect of Avitra Life, to talk about the company a little bit and what you're trying to achieve. Natasha, so great to see you. So tell us what a process architect is.
Thank you for having me. Process architect is a person who synchronizes efforts of multiple teams. So if we are talking about, if he was talking about analyzing patient data and Vita trying to build a device for monitoring, hormonal monitoring, and we have a clinical piece where the doctors can explain how we can better integrate something that Vita is developing into the healthcare. And then, of course, as a business business factor where we want to make it affordable and profitable at the same time for the company. So I'm trying to synchronize all the efforts that all is going to lead to the same result where we can produce something that can improve women's health.
Thank you. And so talk a little bit, either one of you, about what you are creating and what's the hope for the next few years. Natasha?
I can take that, sure. So if you told about lack of missing information, about lack of knowledge, and I want to echo that and say that healthcare providers, endocrinologists, or reproductive medicine specialists, it is impossible for them to deduce how to optimize treatment because they're lacking the tools that are needed, and also they don't have the capacity to do this kind of evaluation in real time. So we want to, our first goal is to gain knowledge and share knowledge about what are the specific variables for each woman that either in the hormonal baseline levels or the outcomes of the treatments or the side effects that are long-term side effects in a large scale. So once we have the knowledge and we have the tool that we're developing, we want to help bring this into healthcare practice, help the doctors optimize the timing and the dose of treatments, prevent long-term health risks, and of course achieve better clinical outcomes, better health, and better hormonal balance for women. Either they need hormonal treatment or they don't, but we want to help them achieve both.
And Effie, are you planning to do any large clinical trials with respect to getting some of that data that you need in order to help physicians know what to do with this information?
Yes, absolutely. I'm dreaming for that day. Literally, I dedicated my career, right, in sure. order to get to the point that we can do the change. With my scientific background, my education, I could just go and be the head of IVF clinic, you know, and make a lot of money other than staying in the academic and doing this change. Yes, I do want to get into this point of having a, and the number of clinical trials that can be done are huge. Most of them won't be done by us, right? Because it will be in any field that the hormones are taking place. But I would like to add one more point about, and it's actually touching a vital life, but I think there is a big issue that led to the point that we do not have good diagnostic tests for hormones. It's because steroids hormones are a tiny molecule that are in a such low concentration in the blood, in a picogram levels. You don't need much of estrogen in order to cause a chaos. And we know that tiny level of picogram level of estrogen will do the change. And that's also why the reason that they have a lot of severe side effects when you are overdosing, because they are tiny molecules that do a lot of chaos. And so the reason that they are very small and in very low concentration, making the diagnostic test super challenging. Even in the blood draw, in the regular labs, the clinical labs, it's challenging. So to have it in the home, at home device from fingerprint, for example, is really challenging, or from saliva or urine and so on. So what I liked at Avita was to help them and, you know, to develop a unique tool, new tool for the diagnostic that will enable us to test not only steroids and hormones, you know, it also can be applicable for any pharmaceutical drug. How nice it will be that the patient can take them and, you know, their blood test to home and see if they are in the toxicity level or not. And so what Avita Life is doing, and actually my lab is collaborating just to validate their, you know, test, they put together a very healthy brains, I want to say, that from the field of molecular biology, biochemistry, chemistry, diagnostic, and so on, in order to put together a new molecule that will enable this precise, accurate diagnostic test that I strongly believe and hope that it will succeed, that we'll succeed all together to have this kit and to have this option of the diagnostic. And because most of the tests also limited with the range, estrogen can go from one picogram up to thousands. So having a test that can be very accurate. And by the way, a lot of physicians, unfortunately, don't even trust the test results that they are sending into the lab. And so if indeed Avita will be able to deliver such a test, I will be very happy. Any company that will do that, I will be very happy. Yes.
You know, right now, there's a number of tests on the market, both primarily focused on menopause, or are you going into menopause, or are you fertile? And there's saliva tests, there's blood test, and there's urine test. So briefly tell me about the state of our diagnostic testing, our at-home diagnostic testing at this point in time.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we have to keep in our mind that home tests in general are not so accurate as the, let's say, the laboratory tests that are offered. And also provider usually won't trust any home test other than the laboratory. So it's true. There are a lot of different kits and tests that are offered at home. And there is the ovulation predictor kit that different companies are selling over the counter for LH levels and so on. There is, as we mentioned before, pregnancy test, over-the-counter pregnancy test that measuring mainly the beta-HCG hormone. And most of them are urine tests. There is also saliva hormonal testing. Some of them are offering the even estrogen and progesterone. I know that some company are working in order to bring it to the market. Everybody is telling me, why do you want the blood test? Why not to go to non-invasive, like, you know, glucose tests? And I'm so precise. I'm saying, no, with that, you cannot go to the saliva test. Simply because, for example, there's a lot of type of food that have steroids in them that can really change the sensitivity, the accuracy of the hormonal level. There are home blood, fingerprint blood tests, but there are, most of it are blood spot testing, that you are putting one drop of the blood on a paper But for that, you need to send it in the mail and you know, waiting for the results and so on. The urine hormone tests are more reliable, but from my experience, which I try to help a lot of, you know, friends and different couple to find the right timing for ovulation and so on, there are not reliable too. It's really the first urine. No. Actually, let's go to the second one. How much did you drink? It's weird. How come that the LH is now lower during the day comparing to the morning and so on? It's really frustrating. In order to change the clinical protocol, we have to measure the hormones in the blood. That is the most reliable and stable fluid. In order to really validate and change the concept, in order to do an accurate clinical trial, that when we will publish the paper, it will be reliable.
Thank you. So before we wrap up, what did I not ask you, Natasha, that you wanted to make sure that our listeners knew?
Thank you. I can just quickly maybe describe our roadmap to improving women's health and say, you know, what women can expect to hear from us about. So in the next year, we hope to launch an accurate at-home estrogen and progesterone test, which can be used to collect additional missing data points. So we will probably involve women and collect these data points that will help us better understand the result of different hormonal treatment. And then with that, with this information, in the following year, we will improve AI-guided prediction model that will help first understand how to optimize treatments. This will be, it will have to be done in clinical trials. So first we understand how, and then we test it in clinical trial whether our AI-guided algorithm will indeed result in improved clinical outcomes. And then final piece, within 3 years or so, we hope to integrate our technology in healthcare practice so that the doctors can recommend using our technology so they can give a better healthcare.
My guess is that when you do that clinical trial, you're going to be wanting and recruiting women to participate. So hopefully you'll let me know so that we can let our audience know as well that this is something that they can do to contribute to the science that will help with.
That'd be amazing. We'll be happy to keep you updated and, you know, touch base.
So Evie, what is it that you would like to leave our listeners with?
So my call is hormones are good in a level, at a sense, as long as they are monitored and the right levels. And I want everyone to know they have two rights to go and to support in the future the personalized therapy for each patient with his own history, his own genetics. And we are trying even to predict today by your DNA, what are the risks for how you are going to react to this and that therapy, this and that dose. So how come in such a world that I'm actually coming from, such a simple blood monitoring for drugs and for steroids is not there? So, yeah, that's my wish.
That's really profound. Well, thank you both for spending time with us. I learned a lot. And also thank you for your work.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. As we come to the close of today's episode of Beyond the Paper Gown, I'd like to take a moment to reflect on the rich and insightful conversation we've had with both Dr. Efrat Eliyahu and Dr. Natasha Streisand. It's clear that the field of hormone monitoring, especially in areas like IVF and menopause, is on the brink of significant change. And one of the most compelling takeaways from today's discussion is the need to move away from the one-size-fits-all approach that has long dominated hormone therapy. You know, it's evident that personalization in treatment is really not just a luxury, but a necessity. The uniqueness of each individual's hormonal makeup demands a more nuanced and tailored approach to treatment. This is particularly critical when we consider the future of IVF and menopause management. The potential for at-home, precise hormone monitoring tools to revolutionize these treatments is enormous. Imagine a world where the IV process is less burdensome and success rates soar, and menopause is managed more effectively, all because we have a deeper, data-driven understanding of each person's hormonal needs. Companies like Avita are working on exactly this area, and it will be exciting to watch their progress. So as we sign off from today's episode, let's look forward to a future where hormone treatments are as unique as the individuals who need them. I thank you for joining me on Beyond the Paper Gown, and I invite you to subscribe to our newsletter at beyondthepapergown.com and follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube. And don't miss out on any episodes by subscribing to our podcast on your favorite platform. And I have just one request today. Please comment and rate us. It helps us get noticed. Until next time, take good care. Our podcast is produced by Patrick Shambayati and me, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Healthcare for Humans, hosted by Dr. Sundar, expands our understanding of the history and culture of different communities and how to provide culturally responsive care. There's an episode you should check out where guest Dr. Duran details the systemic barriers faced by individuals with DACA status and highlights the importance of addressing these barriers. Check out Healthcare for Humans on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.